and welcome into this week's College Basketball Bonanza After Party. I'm Nicholas Hodel, Dominic Stern, alongside me, a third member of our team, Dom Contini, is here as well. And we got a little bit of a different episode for you here on our midweek after party because as much as I would have loved to have avoided talking about the coaching carousel in the middle of March Madness, well, this carousel has given us no choice as teams are using an opportunity. If they know a guy they like, they will pursue, will zero in, as John Rothstein likes to say, and they will get their guy, even if teams are even less than 24 hours removed from losing an NCAA tournament game, or if you're Xavier, just fire your coach directly in the middle of the NIT and then get your guy pretty much immediately. So really the big overarching theme of this carousel is that it's happened incredibly quick. And these big positions, these big jobs are going down almost as quickly as they're coming up.
Yeah. And like you said, like what Rothstein says, the coaching carousel right now is a lot like a lion and a gazelle. Once a team sees a coach they want, they're going to go after it. It's definitely weird with the timing of some of these coach hires. Like, for example, with Ohio State's assistant head coach, who's going to Illinois State, Ryan Peden. I mean, they haven't even finished a regular season yet, and Ryan Peden was hired to be the next head coach at Illinois State. And you just have to think about, like, if you do that, you know, that program knows. Like, for example, Ohio State knows Ryan Peden already has one foot out the door. His complete focus is not with the team that is right now about to be in the tournament. And I just think that's wrong. And I think there's going to need to be some rules that need to be put in place for why schools have to wait a certain amount of time, because I think it just ruins everything.
I'll get to that point in a moment. I'm going to let Dominic get his take on how quickly everything's transpired so far.
Well, and I mean, it also comes down to the fact that there are head coaches who are coaching at the lower levels or, you know, at like a school like Seton Hall who is trying to progress up, and coaches are trying to also progress up. And you can't talk to those guys while they're in season, or you're at least not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also guys who we'll talk about in a little bit, like Sean Miller, Archie Miller, Steve Prome, other coaches who were fired last year, didn't take jobs this year. You know, it's kind of took a year off. All of those guys, they were working with the Field of 68, which I thought was fantastic because they gave really cool insight on a nightly basis, not only for us as fans, but for athletic directors and whatnot, to go see how coaches are breaking things down live,
mm-hmm.
how they're analyzing things, not just from your team, but from their team, so you can be looking at how they view film. And it's obviously set up Sean Miller to go to Xavier, back to where he originally coached. And, I mean, these teams have to go fast, because if they don't jump on the guy that they want, they know that another school is going to. These guys are all more than qualified. There are so many qualified candidates for every single coaching job. And that's why they have to go fast. And unfortunately, it sucks for schools like Ohio State or even Baylor or New Mexico State, where it's become evident that their coaches didn't have all of their focus on their games. And I think that's just tough for all parties.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right that and I think there's two words causing this: transfer portal.
Yeah, most definitely.
But to get away from that, like, to your point, like, you think that there should perhaps be some rules in place to kind of like dictate the timing of this. Like, how would you go about doing that? Because I certainly can't trust the NCAA to put in good stuff in place.
Yeah, well, we everyone knows the fan opinion about the NCAA. The NCAA is corrupt. We can get into that a different time. But there needs to be some rule in place, because it, I think, ruins the competitive nature of the tournament if a coach is already stepping out the door not having any focus on the team he's currently coaching with. So whether that be a rule where you have to wait until the team loses, you have to wait until the tournament's over, you never know. So there definitely needs to be a rule in place, because it's getting out of hand. And with the transfer portal, that's literally changing the game of college basketball. So something needs to happen.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right in this. Like, the transfer portal has changed how you build teams.
Yep.
And it's come to a point where top transfers are committing early. Yep. They're going into the portal early, and they're committing early. We haven't seen any high-profile commits yet, obviously, because we still got basketball going on.
Mm-hmm.
And there is still a national championship to be decided. But I would expect about 2 weeks after the NCAA tournament championship, we might see high-profile guys commit to schools.
Yeah. Might. You will.
And it's just it's forced a situation to where we are now in a never-ending, but to put it in NFL terms, like what they call their league year, we're in a never-ending league year in college.
No, yeah.
We have gone from, you know, your preseason, your practices in the preseason, the actual season.
It's changed the game.
Yeah, sure. It really has.
If you even look at Kentucky's team, this is a Cal Poly team that we've never seen before, a very old, experienced, veteran team. But it didn't work because they hadn't gelled yet. It's a team that just got together, teams that didn't build that chemistry, and we saw what happened to them against St. Peter's. And it's going to change the way teams are made. It's going to be to change the way teams have chemistry. I think it's honestly going to ruin it because players who are like, oh, okay, I'm not going to play on this team. I'm not going to focus with this team. I'm just going to sit out this year or not give it my full effort and wait on the through the off season so I can just step out the door and go to another program that will actually appreciate me. It's ruining college athletes who feel like they're entitled. And I would say with our generation, there are a lot of athletes who feel entitled to playing time or stardom, whatever that is.
Yeah, and then this is becoming a case now to where, like, this is now a 1A, 1B recruiting. This is one transfer portal and traditional recruiting have now become 1A and 1B mm-hmm. in how you build your team.
Yeah.
And this has become an ugly side effect
yeah.
of that.
And we've seen it with Ohio State. I mean, like, they got a transfer with Jamari Wheeler, a player from in their conference, something I still don't agree with, how you're going to let a player transfer to another team in your conference. But, yeah, like, they were technically recruiting Wheeler when they were scouting them. So you're recruiting 24/7, whether that be high school or players already in college.
Yeah, and we're now in a position to where, it's this, like I said, ugly side effect. If you guys had to put a mark on when you think it would be ethically appropriate for these schools to have these conversations with coaches, when do you think that point would be?
End of the tournament or when a team is eliminated.
But it's like we've seen the point where, like, New Mexico State, San Francisco, you know, they were eliminated about 24 hours later the hire was official.
It was less.
Yeah. Like I just don't think that's right.
I mean, I know you can't really control that, but there's got to be some litigation in place.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly agree, too. I think we also can agree that I don't trust the NCAA to make those rules.
Yeah, well, I think the NCAA won't exist in 5 years.
Because we got a freaking da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but that's all I'll say about that. To move on in our show, to now get into actual legitimate hires, the Millers, they will both be coaching next year. Sean Miller going back to a Xavier program that he built in the Atlantic 10 when they were there, and a stint in Arizona that ended in scandal, but you can't deny what he has done at Arizona for really an impressive stretch from 2013 to 2018 with some round one upsets mixed in there. And then Archie Miller to Rhode Island. And he built Dayton up really well to make tournaments in the A-10. Didn't quite fare as well as at Indiana, as many would have hoped.
Made an Elite Eight at Dayton, couldn't make it to the tournament at Indiana. Wild.
Yeah. But let's just get into, first off, both of these guys. Because both of these guys were on the Photo 68. They both were really good analysts on that. And I know you listen to this a lot, Dominic. Yeah. I think that both these programs are getting guys that really know the game and what they're doing.
Yeah, no, those shows were awesome. It was an hour of radio on SiriusXM, but they would live stream them just with video, and they would interact with viewers during the radio commercial breaks on Twitter and on YouTube. It was pretty cool, and I'd imagine they're probably going to go after some of the coaches who were fired this year who didn't get jobs. Mark Turgeon's, don't be shocked if he's on Field of 68, because I don't imagine he's going to get a job right away, but yeah, it was really fun to listen to these guys just break down games in ways that you don't ever see them. Because, let's be real, I mean, at press conferences, they're just going to give, like, the cliche answers because they're forced to be there. These guys are being paid to give their basketball analysis. And it was awesome. I loved it. It was something that I would listen to in podcast form either the next day. It would also be stuff where I'm doing homework by myself, and I'm like, oh, you know, it's Field of 68 After Dark. Let me go throw that on. And it was fantastic analysis. Archie and Sean did a fantastic job. There are some other guys in there. Steve Prohm and Rob Dowster and Jeff Goodman were the guys who would like run it. They did a fantastic job. I think Miller going back to Xavier, which is where he got his head coaching career started and where he really built up that Xavier program, he's going to go revitalize it. And I think it's going to make the Big East even better than what it was this year. And part of the reason why it was off to such a good start was because so was Xavier. And then Rhode Island had really teetered off ever since Dan Hurley left and took the job at UConn. And I think that he could help get Rhode Island back up to the top of the A-10. And the last couple of years we've seen from the A-10 haven't been as near to the power of which we know the A-10 can be at. And maybe Archie can bring that back and we can see some more Marchie.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the individual hires here. You mentioned a lot of the key points I wanted to make. But for Sean Miller, going back to his Xavier program that pretty much he built up, Chris Mack continued the excellence, and Travis Dielich just really struggled in the Big East with this Xavier program. And going back to your roots to get a guy who really built you up as a program, I think it's a really smart move because he knows the culture of Xavier, and he knows how to get guys to go to cultures like Xavier's. I think that is a brilliant asset to have, especially in the transfer portal, where Xavier is probably going to have to build off of if they want a successful first year off of Sean Miller.
Well, yeah, I mean, Sean Miller has already given $100,000 to DeAndre Ayton, so... So transfer portal might be easy for Coach Miller. All jokes aside,
Sean Miller... NIL deals are going to be a big pitching point, I would imagine.
Yeah, but all jokes aside, Sean Miller is a great coach. This is a great hire for Xavier. I'm still kind of confused with the firing of Coach Steele. I didn't think he was given that much time. But Sean Miller is a great hire. We saw what he did at Arizona. He had a lot of great years there. So, especially with him going back to his roots, it's going to be a lot of fun for that team in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah, and Dominic has thrown the Travis Steele profile up for Travis Steele. I mean, this is the guy that just struggled at Xavier to make tournaments. I don't think he made a single one in 4 years.
No, and they probably weren't going to make it in 2020 at a 19-13 record, but we'll never know. And the other 3 years missed the tournament, 19-16, 13-8, and then 20-13.
What was their Big East record? That's what I'm curious about. Each of the 4 years, their Big East record.
Okay. 2019, they were 9-9.
Okay.
2020, they were 8-10. 2021, they were 6-7. And then in 2022, they were 8-11.
That doesn't cut it.
No.
Losing, like, that many consecutive losing seasons in conference for Xavier, for that program, is not going to cut it. And that's what got Travis Steele fired, or mutually agreed, you could say whatever you want. Like, that's what got him the axe at the end of the day. You can't have that many losing... Xavier's now is that program to where you can't have that many losing seasons in conference consecutively and stay at a job. You can't do it. Xavier... And this is what Sean Miller's built up and what Chris Mack has continued before he left.
Well, we need to give Thad Mata some credit. He went to the tournament all 3 years he had at Xavier.
Yeah, like, those three coaches built a standard of excellence at Xavier to where if you can't live up to it, you're gone. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time in a long time that Xavier has actually had to pull a trigger and get rid of a guy. And that speaks volumes that Xavier was willing to get rid of a guy because you normally see these coaches move up the ladder.
Oh, it's been a great stepping stone.
Yeah, and that just has not been the case. So, and for someone who's been out for a while, you know, has the scandal on his back, it's a great move to go back. It's a great move to go back. And for Xavier to take that chance, you know, and go back to their roots and get him, I think it's gonna work out great unless we really see the hammer put on Sean Miller individually from this guy. But I'm not sure that's gonna happen.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree.
He got fired. Like, he served his time.
Yeah. To move on to Archie Miller in particular, you know, his 4 years at Indiana before his year away from coaching. And this is exactly what we mentioned with Xavier. The conference record for Indiana is not going to cut it. 9-9, 8-12, 9-11, 7-12. That does not cut it at Indiana University. It will never cut it at Indiana University. And, I mean, he probably could have made the tournament in 2020. Was it consensus 10 seed in the bracket matrix? Appears on KenPom is the only thing we got to go off of, unfortunately. But those conference records do not cut it at a program that is as proud as Indiana. And Rhode Island, under David Cox, same thing with Xavier. No NCAA tournaments in 4 seasons. Only one time that Rhode Island was a winning record in conference. That was in 2020. They were slated to be a 3 seed in the A-10 tournament that year. 13-5 record in the A-10. And they only made the A-10 semis once. That was in 2019. They had an upset the one to do it in the quarterfinals. So I think, again, another great opportunity for Archie Miller to get back into coaching. And we're on a program that has more expectations than what's been going on. Now, this conference is tough as it is with programs like a VCU, like a Dayton. There's like St. Bonaventure was supposed to be solid this year until that didn't quite pan out the way the things expected.
They've won 2 straight games on the road in the NIT tournament, though.
That is something to speak of. And I'm sure I'm missing other programs, but this conference is also getting Loyola Chicago. And that's going to make it a really tough conference. But Archie Miller and Rhode Island might be a solid pairing here.
I like it. And we already mentioned Archie Miller's success in the A-10. He knows how to recruit to those small private schools up in the New England area and the Middle Eastern coast. So I think it's going to be a good hire. And, you know, I think that being in Indiana just wasn't a good fit for him. It was a little too big of a program. Not to say it was a bad hire. It just didn't go well. Yeah, so
sounds like a better coach in the Big Ten, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, there's one thing that stands out to me, though, with his Dayton teams and his Indiana teams. It's that he has developed a standard of defense. I mean, in his past 7 years that he has coached, he has had top 65 adjusted defensive efficiencies in every single one of those years. And from his first year in Dayton to his last year in Dayton, and also from his first year in Indiana to his last year in Indiana, those marks improved. With the caveat of from 16 to 17, from the second to last to last year Dayton, and from the second to last year to last year Indiana, they took a step back. But there was improvement on that side of the ball that was very evident. And I think we could see the same sort of thing happen to develop at Rhode Island as well.
You know, I mean, the Rams, they got to get back to the A-10 promise, because when they're making tournaments, when VCU's making the tournament, when Dayton's a tournament caliber team, when St. Bonaventure is a tournament caliber team, when St. Louis is a tournament caliber team, that's when the A-10 is really good. We did not see that this year, and thankfully Richmond stepped it up to keep that A-10 2-bid streak alive.
And we haven't seen that sort of A-10 for a while, if I'm being honest.
No.
But
last year there were 9 and 7 seeds.
Yeah,
or but, 9 and 10.
Yeah,
sorry.
But the big thing here is that I believe when the A-10 is a legitimate conference and is just as good as the other near majors, college basketball is better off. The A-10 is such a historic conference with basketball excellence that when that conference is good, college basketball is better off for it.
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot like the Big East. I mean, the Atlantic 10 has a lot of programs that have history, and we know when they are good, it makes college basketball better for sure.
Absolutely, and I totally expect for Archie Miller to put Rhode Island at least in the conversation to eclipse what David Cox did under Rhode Island. That is my baseline expectation for Archie Miller. He, I think, is better than David Cox. And it may take him a year or two. I mean, let's be real. I mean, his first couple years at Dayton weren't quite, you know, the promised land. I mean, great offensive teams, though, 2012 and 2013 Dayton years. But the defense lacked. And that's why you saw pretty average A-10 records. But when the defense got really good, that's when this Dayton team was at its finest. That's when he got this Dayton team to be really good teams, be a really good consistent threat in the A-10. And I totally expect that standard of defense will be at Rhode Island. Well, and I would expect that Rhode Island will become a player again in the A-10. I mean, that's my baseline expectation for Archie Miller at Rhode Island.
Yeah, that's all they need. And then if he does that again, he can go take a shot at another good job. Probably not Indiana good, but, you know, you get what I'm saying.
I mean, what's the kind of level you think would be good for him after Rhode Island if he's...
Power 5, maybe not in the Indiana Power 5 school, but a Power 5.
Power 5, like middle of the conference?
Yeah. Not Indiana, like top 5 basketball program of all time.
Yeah, Indiana is a middle of a conference team, but...
What is
but
now?
But they have the history.
Right.
Yeah.
They have Assembly Hall where you see videos of Coach Bob Knight throwing chairs.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to say, I want to wear those pants.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, absolutely. And in Indiana, like, you think they'd be doing much better. And I would imagine Mike Woodson, give him some time, and he might take Indiana back to where they should be within the Big Ten.
Well, they got to the NCAA tournament, and they got seeded against a very good 5 seed. It's tough.
Yeah, it's just the way it is sometimes. to move along this after party, perhaps close the show out in the last, like, 10 minutes or so, I'm going to play a little game of good hire, bad hire. We go through some of the Power Conference hires that have happened over the last several days as teams have been knocked out from the NCAAs and have been hired by other schools, or reported, not exactly official, but are reported a hire, as in the case of the first one, and we can kind of go from there. So Kevin Willard to Maryland has been a big report. At Seton Hall, Kevin Willard was, you could almost say, kind of stagnant at Seton Hall. Never an elite Big East player, but he had players at Seton Hall that were really good, and teams that were pretty darn solid for the most part, especially analytically. And since the Big East reconfigured itself, Seton Hall has never been outside the top 100 in KenPom, so you have that going for them. So Kevin Willard is a preferred replacement. Danny Manning, really, you can say what you want about him, but it's just a tough year for him at Maryland. A tough situation for Maryland overall. They had to find a guy they could keep permanently, and it seemed like Danny Manning wasn't exactly the guy they were looking for. Mm-hmm. But Maryland, under Mark Turgeon, 5 NCAA tournament appearances in 10 seasons. They all came within Maryland's Big Ten era the last 7 years before he eventually...
And one of his best teams was coming in 2020, and they didn't get the chance to play in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that would have been the 6th appearance for him if he would have gotten that job, if that didn't happen.
Anthony Cowan and Jalen Smith were special. I thought they were going to make a big run.
Yeah, but only one Sweet 16 appearance in those 5 appearances. That was in 2016 as a 5 seed. He had 3 second-round exits and 1 first-round exit in 2017 as a 6 seed. So Kevin Miller to Maryland, good hire, bad hire?
Good hire, great hire. I think following a coach like Mark Turgeon at a Maryland program who does have some history comes with great expectation. And I think Willard will be able to do that.
Yeah, I think this is a good hire. I don't think it's a great hire just because he was never able to do anything at Seton Hall. And at Maryland, they have the expectation. They've won a national title this century. They want to try and get anywhere near back there.
Well,
and hasn't done that at Seton Hall, which is not a problem because it's really hard to do that.
Mm.
That's why it's a good hire, because he's been consistent at Seton Hall, and if that's what you can get, then I think
If he was able to get players to Seton Hall, he's going to be able to get players to a program like Maryland. Yeah. I mean, Maryland is the headquarters for Under Armour, and players love that. So,
and the thing with him, too, is that his best year was also wiped out by COVID. I mean, Seton Hall in 2020 was
Miles Powell was dangerous.
Yeah, it was projected in the Matrix as a 3 seed, despite a 13-5 Big East record. By the way, it was his best Big East record within his entire tenure. Never quite got it going in the old Big East, despite some solid teams analytically. And 13-5 was the best he got in the new Big East. 12-6 was next, and everything else was 11-8 or below. So it was just kind of like that average Big East team. But he had good analytical profiles with those Seton Hall teams, which, again, should mean something in the end of the day. So now, of course, the level will be sort of higher for him, you know, get into NCAA tournaments, which he has consistently. Maryland also with Turgeon, before Maryland pretty much forced him out. You know, they were there. But can Kevin Willard raise the standard at Maryland in a really tough Big Ten conference? We will have to see. Todd Golden going to Florida after 3 years at San Francisco. This is an official hire, and what a year San Francisco had. A first-round exit, a brutal matchup against Murray State, a great game there. But Florida under Mike White, who is the replacement for Todd Golden, if I could speak that correctly. 4 NCAA tournament appearances in 7 years, would have been 5-1 for COVID. 2017 was in the Elite Eight year as a 5 seed, but they lost to a 7 seed in the Elite Eight that year to South Carolina. 3 second-round exits, though, in this past year. It was an NIT visit as a 3 seed for the Florida Gators. So Todd Golden to Florida, good hire, bad hire?
I think it's a great hire. Golden, in just 3 years, really rose the ranks as coach. San Francisco was very consistent in the West Coast Conference, which, as we know, is a good conference, and super analytical. He knows how to get guys to go play. And I think at Florida, they were never able to, like, go out and get great recruits.
With Billy Donovan, they were.
Florida, I mean, this team won back-to-back national titles. Yeah. So they have that expectation. And those are recent. It's not like IU or, you know, Nebraska.
They weren't that recent.
Right.
But they were in the 21st century, so.
Yeah. So I think this is a great hire. Mm-hmm. I think Golden's going to do good things.
I agree.
I think Golden may struggle at first to contend in the SEC with just the amount of programs who have elevated. I mean, look at it. Auburn, Bama, Tennessee. Like
these Oklahoma are, and Texas are coming in too.
Yeah, in several years, if Golden stays around that long. This is a really tough basketball conference that has developed. Programs have risen to elite levels within the SEC.
Well, if Golden's able to lock down the state of Florida, that's going to help a ton.
That's going to be huge.
I mean, Florida's one of the best high school athletic states in the country, and especially with basketball. That's one of the problems certain coaches have all across the country. So if you're able to lock down your own state, that does numbers for your program.
And I also think it's worth noting that the previous coach before Todd Golden at San Francisco, Kyle Smith, had the same exact track as Golden. Year one was the baseline, pretty solid baseline. Year two was a step back, though San Francisco was in the CBI final in 2018. And year three was the breakthrough that allowed him to get hired by Washington State. And in 3 years, he has taken a team from 6-12 in the Pac-12 to 11-9 in the NIT second round at least. I'm not sure they did in that second round game.
They won. They played BYU.
So they're in the quarterfinals of the NIT now, and he's done that in 3 years. For a program like Washington State, that's progress.
Right. That's what I was about to say. Like, Washington State is not the same hire as Florida is.
Exactly.
And he's progressing Washington State, so I think you're going to see something similar with Golden.
Yeah. Now, obviously, the expectation is higher.
Much.
But regardless, you're looking at a potential here for a coach that has seen what it is like to make that progression and knows that he can do it. This is the exact same trend as Kyle Smith's tenure in San Francisco. The exact same trend. This can be a really good hire if he's able to meet the expectations of Florida, which is get back to contending for the SEC. Get back to contending for a conference championship. And for a program like Florida, that's the expectation, you know? Like, get back to that. Like, there's a reason why what Mike Gray was doing was not good enough whatsoever. And I think Todd Golden's got a chance to really get things interesting. Chris Johns going to Mississippi State, and he has done a terrific job at New Mexico State, getting to be a consistent force in the WAC outside of 2021, where things just were not so hot. But
and they're still in the WAC championship game.
Exactly. That's a key thing to note as well, but what could have been 4-5 if it wasn't for COVID. We never would have known, but New Mexico State was 16-0 in the WAC that year before everything was called off. But Mississippi State under Ben Howland just won its NCAA tournament appearance in 7 years, but he left that place much better than it was when he came. That's the big point of note. Every single year under him was in the KenPom top 88, and in 3 years it was in the top 50. But just 8-10 in the SEC in the last 2 years, and that one NCAA tournament appearance came in a 5-12 upset when they lost to Liberty in the first round. So this particular hire, Chris Johns to Mississippi State, good hire, bad hire?
I think it's a good hire. I mean, continuing the success of a mid-major program, I think, is significant because when you get transfers and recruits who aren't at the low level to come in and they see, all right, you know, this program's done well, but then a coach leaves, you say, all right, like, I don't know if the success is going to be held up, but Johns exactly did that in New Mexico State. They've been the WAC, and I don't think that's going to be as much the case going forward just because the WAC is a lot better with the additions from the Southland Conference, but I think this is a great hire.
Yeah, I would agree. He's been able to get players to New Mexico State, so he's definitely one of those guys that players want to be around, and I've been around the college basketball world for a while. I've known a couple of college basketball athletes, and coaches who have great relationships with players know about that across the country, so that's going to want players to go to your program, and I think Mississippi State's a great spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy, Johns, that was hired by New Mexico State after a few years away from coaching. He had coached for a year at Bowling Green in 2015. A couple of years away from the head coaching scene, got the opportunity in 2018, and he excelled mightily and became one of those coaches that maybe for a few years was being undervalued. But he finally gets the chance in the SEC, and once again, really tough conference. Mm-hmm. Really tough conference by all standards.
For sure.
And so how he is going to take Mississippi State, because Mississippi State may not expecting him to take it to the next level. The standard for Mississippi State that they might be looking for from him of Richard and being honest, is tournament appearances on a consistent level.
Or just being competitive in the SEC. But then again, being competitive in the SEC probably means a tournament appearance. So.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And that's where the SEC is at the basketball conference now. Mm-hmm. Like, the SEC has gotten so good at basketball, but if you're competitive in this conference on a 9-9-out basis and you're getting a 500 record, and if, as long as you backed up a good non-conference, it may be enough.
Yep.
I mean, it may be enough. And what this program's dying for is consistent tournament appearances. And I know Ben Howland, let's give him credit. He turned this program into a program that is viable in the SEC. That is really good news.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's going to be about how you take the next step. And ultimately, I think that's what the Bulldogs are trying to do. They're trying to take that to the next step. One final hire before we go. I know this is going a little longer than a typical after party episode. We got a lot to talk about here. Kansas State. This is the news that as we were recording this, is actually broke not too long ago as we were recording this, hiring Baylor assistant Jerome Tang, Baylor's top assistant. He was there for 19 years and was promoted to the associate head in 2017. This is the guy that's finally getting his shot at the head coaching ranks. He spent some time as interim head coach in 2012, 13, 2020, 2021, won all four of those games as interim, and did a very good job of really being alongside Chuck Rue for Baylor's 2021 title run. So, Kansas State getting Jerome Tang, good hire, bad hire.
I love it. I mean, with him staying in the Big 12 conference, I think he's going to help him in this program a lot. He already knows a lot of these other team schemes, so he's not leaving home base, essentially. So I think he's going to be able to get guys to Kansas State, and I think they'll be a competitive team in this conference. And we saw this year. If you're competitive in the Big 12, you're going to be just fine.
I mean, I think it's a good hire. I don't really know much about Tang, but, I mean, like you mentioned, Nick, was the lead assistant on a team that won the national title and has consistently been very, very good. So I think it's a good hire. I don't know if it's a great hire, though. We'll have to see on that.
Yeah, I think we will, too. But I think this is, like, if you're going to try to replace a legend in coaching, what Kansas State has had, you know, why not give someone a shot?
Yeah.
Like, you're not a top-tier Big 12 program. And I think it's have you understand, too, that when BYU, Houston, UCF, when those guys come into the conference, and I think I'm forgetting one more than that, too. Cincinnati, right?
Yeah, Cincinnati.
Yeah, when, like, those are really good basketball programs.
Mm-hmm.
So this conference is going to remain an elite basketball conference.
Yeah, even without Texas and Oklahoma. And I wanted to add, like, with this coach coming in, Kansas State is going to be a great program with those teams leaving. I mean, like, the team that's going to be on the top is going to be Baylor. And I think a lot of change is going to be coming to this Baylor program. So it's just going to be very interesting to see.
Yeah, you're absolutely right in that. And I think that's all the time we're going to spend here. We will spend plenty of time on the coaching carousel throughout the next several months. But this is really the first time we've had a chance to discuss the coaching carousel and just how crazy it's gotten already. For Doug Pantani, Dominic Stern, Nicholas Hodel, enjoy yourselves. As a reminder, Sunday, big show Sunday on Blaze Radio on BlazeRadioOnline.com. We'll be previewing the Final Four. I think we'll have the Final Four locked in by that point as well. So that'll be all kinds of fun with that as well. And there might be some other stuff in between now and then. So who knows? But for now, I've been Nicholas Hodel. Have a very good rest of your week. You know, don't panic yourself too much longer. We'll have March Madness basketball soon. But until then, enjoy yourselves. Have a very good week.